Brendan.
Hey, Alan.
Wow, it's another week, another Not a Thing podcast.
Guest free.
Yes, guest free. Guest less. Hostful.
Guestless? No, not hostful. That's already a thing somewhere else.
We can't borrow that one.
Okay. I'm not going to. No.
We don't want to get sued by the conglomerate that has become Nerdist Industries.
Yeah. I mean, I know we're, you know, personal friends of Chris Hardwick, having met him multiple times, but I'm sure he wouldn't hesitate to crush us with the iron nerd fist.
Yeah. He has significant powers he can marshal if he needs to. So
legendary powers.
So let's just stay away from that, and we'll continue on with our show. Just you and me this time. We do hope to have a guest next week. I hope everyone enjoyed our guest last week. Maybe not our guest next week though.
I hope that our guest next week enjoyed our guest last week.
That's true. At least some point. I think maybe there was a portion of the show that may have been taken offense to, but we'll see.
Meh. You have to be some sort of wuss to let that get to you. I don't think that's the case.
We can.
I have a higher opinion of our future guest than you do, apparently.
Well, we'll see. We'll see.
That's just me stacking the deck before just greasing up the wheels on those that bus.
gotta you know, warm up that throwing arm.
Yeah, I don't want to pull a muscle and I throw you under the bus.
Got it. Well, what's been happening this week? I guess this happened last week. But we didn't get to it during our show. But apparently a sushi restaurant in New York is doing something kind of interesting. And they're explicitly saying that the employees will not accept tips. So it says that on the bill. It probably says it on the menu. I guess they train all the employees to say it. And the reason the employees are okay with that is that they're being paid a living wage rather than surviving off of tips. And I'm wondering how you feel about that, having worked in kind of a food service-y industry at some point in your previous life. I've never worked in No, I've never worked in a food service capacity. I've volunteered. That doesn't really count. But
no.
They don't tip volunteers either, let me tell you. But I think it sort of makes sense. I mean, I can tell you how it feels as a consumer, and I think it feels a little weird only because I'm so used to tipping that being told not to tip makes me concerned that someone's pulling a fast one. But yeah, what are your thoughts?
Judging by how terrible most people are at tipping, people who haven't worked in the food industry can sometimes be terrible tippers. I think people who work in restaurants generally tip better. Taking that out of the equation must be nice. I've worked a lot in the food industry, but I've never been in a position where I had, because I know there's like servers, they'll get paid way below minimum wage because there's the expectation that they'll make it back in tips.
Right.
So like, they'll make $3 an hour, but then they make enough tips to cover it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not such a fan of that. I think a steady paycheck is a nice thing.
Well, do you think that, I mean, this is interesting because it's a sushi restaurant, so I would think it would be a higher end kind of on the, you know, on the food chain, as it were. But I would think that tips and wages would generally be higher just because it is a sushi restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, they may have the luxury as employers to be able to do that without, you know, in having, you know, a crazy high turnover rate if they started to mess with people. Because I think you don't want a turnover rate, a high turnover rate for people that are preparing kind of raw fish.
No. Well, yeah, especially in the sushi industry where there's certain standards that have to be met.
Sure.
Training wise, I mean, that's an investment on its own.
Mm-hmm.
Well, but no, I think it's a good thing. I think more paying people more for doing a good job, just because, you know, shouldn't have to sing for your supper.
Or whenever I think of stuff like that, I always think of what is it? Making people dance by shooting at their feet.
That's what tipping is. It's like if you work in an office building, you have a salary, and whether you, however you do your job, that's how you get paid. Whether you're good at it, whether you're bad at it, I mean, you keep your job or you don't. But that's kind of it. And even then, you get bonuses if you do well. So it's like getting tipped. But in the service industry, which I think people interact with on a more regular basis, that's not the case.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's classism.
Yeah. I think that is part of it. I mean, there was that article a whale back.
A whale.
What happened? I don't know if we talked about it on the podcast. It was about the handyman who it was just an interview with a guy who was a general contractor. And he said that people kind of fall into different reactions to how we would work. And one of them would be people would feel really like, oh, thank you so much for doing this. You know, I know it's your job, but thank you so much because I could never do it. And that's kind of the more kind of even keel normal reaction. And then the kind of out of left field reactions would be either, I could have done this, but it's good I'm paying you to because I have other more important things to do. Kind of like this level of
dickishness.
Essentially, yes. And then the absolute kind of, you know, full asshole version is just being completely dismissive of the thing and treating it very utilitarian, like, I don't do this. This is what I pay people for.
Yeah.
So I do see that having worked in what I consider a service industry of IT, that there is that level of like, well, this is your thing and you do it.
Well, that's because you're a magician. It's magic. It's not, no, people can't do that stuff.
So that's interesting because I think a lot of people think they can do food service, but really can't. I mean, that's just, I mean, it really is a thing unto itself to do that.
I eat food every day. I could do that. You can't. Yeah, you could do it terribly. There is a craft to it.
Right. Doing it for someone else is different than doing it for yourself. You generally are you're easier on yourself. Yeah, but I think it probably would take some retraining, and they'd have to be pretty clear about it because I think even when the tip is included, you know, my sense is, well, maybe I should tip more, especially if it's, you know, really good service. So
don't like the automatically added tip.
Sure.
I don't like the, oh, if you have six or more people, you get, this will be your tip amount. I don't like that.
Okay.
I think, and maybe it's just semantics, but I think incorporating that into the cost of the meal is better than imposing, like, if you're going to keep it as a social thing, then you shouldn't, it shouldn't be forced like that.
It shouldn't
It's
be.
one, it's one or the other. That's kind of in between.
Sure. Okay, because I think that's true, because it's like if you're a big enough party, then it's like they have to explicitly say, oh yeah, you know what, we're going to, upcharge you via this method, rather than just kind of building that into their pricing.
And there's the awkwardness in those larger parties where sometimes there's people that are generous with tipping or consider tipping important, and then you're in a group of people who they don't tip very well. You ever have that where the food gets brought out, you eat food, you pay your check, and then everyone puts in for the tip, and then someone inevitably goes and puts a few more dollars in?
And or for me, it seemed to always happen that it's a little bit short, and then you have to, okay, everyone just put in a couple more dollars, and you go all the way around the
Where this
Oh.
would eliminate all of that.
Interesting. I think I would still, I don't know, it's weird because, I mean, even in a regular restaurant, I don't have a sense that people are necessarily being paid like fairly. I guess my assumption is that it works out, because if it doesn't, I would hope they would leave. So, however they do it, I think having a policy of not having tips is fine, assuming that they do make a point of it as saying that, yeah, we're doing it because blah 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 blah, and kind of building that in training wise. They can't just, be like a, because otherwise it feels, I think it feels weird, because it'd be like going to like a counter service place, not like a McDonald's necessarily, but something where you, it's not, it's table service, but you're paying at the counter kind of thing, which there are a couple of places that are like that. If you've ever eaten at Country Gourmet in San Jose, it's counter service, but you get a number and they bring it out to you, but they also come by and refill your drinks, or offer to, if you get a drink that's refillable, which is water, or they have a juice that is poured from a pitcher. If you get soda, you go get it yourself. But it's kind of a weird, like, they bring the food out to you, it comes out in different parts, they'll bring you extra plates, and they'll take plates away while you're there, but you don't order with them. So if you do want to tip them, you can kind of tip them ahead of time, and it actually has that on the table on this little placard, which I find kind of funny, because they have to explain it, because it is a weird system, and they kind of have continued it being weird instead of changing their method into any other way. They continue this kind of tradition of how of an odd setup. It's just a different way to do it, I guess. But I think it needs that kind of distinction of, we're doing it this way, and we're doing it this way because this. And it has to be explicit, because it is so different. And they
Because
probably
people
want that
deserve a
difference.
livable wage.
Yay, livable wages. I'm a fan.
Definitely a thing.
Well, no transition.
There's
I'm like racking my brain. How does this go? No, it doesn't go.
no.
No. Another another bit of news this last week. Oh, here's the transition. Here's the transition. Here's the transition. At food service, a lot of the I've seen a lot of places that have been taking payments via Square or some other thing. Essentially, the cashier has a glorified iPad, and it mostly works, I think, for Square and stuff like that, because it's just a single transaction. But there have been cases where you have to type your name, or you have to type the number and you're typing on the screen. And I guess someone decided, and it's not related to food service, but it is related to kind of tablets, of having a different keyboard specifically for typing on tablets. And the keyboard layout is generically called KALQ, which, you know, just like QWERTY is the first, you know, set of keys on the keyboard, the first row. KALQ is, it's a four by four matrix on both sides of the keyboard or of the tablet, and you kind of type with your thumbs. And the way that it's laid out is that they do kind of this weird number frequency thing, and they say every time you type, you should be typing, you should be alternating your thumbs, because that's faster than kind of the QWERTY hunt and peck. Because the way keyboards on tablets are, I guess your thumbs are further apart than they would be if you had a phone. So rather than use the phone or the traditional style keyboard and you're typing with your thumbs and, you know, in a really small space, you use more space, but I don't know.
It seems like a lot of work.
Just the time I took to explain it is kind of crazy. I think the theory is that you can learn a new keyboard in something like, you know, a day's worth of use, which is probably true. I remember using...
I don't know if I believe that.
Well, I used a Dvorak keyboard just because there was one at work once, and I'm like, well, I got extra time. And I was let go of this from this job, by the way, because I had too much time on my hands. But, while I was there, one of the things that I did was like, well, I have a day. I'm just going to plug in a different keyboard and muck around with it. And it took a while to get past the hunt and peck stage, but I wasn't completely touch typing, but I was looking down less and being able to type with my fingers rather than just, you know, my pointer fingers. But so I think it's possible, but I don't know if I want a new keyboard layout just to use on a tablet, right? Because I'm not going to use that keyboard layout when I'm typing at a keyboard, which I think I still do more than I type on a tablet. And I don't want to remember two keyboard layouts. That's just silly. So while I admire them for kind of having an interesting idea, another idea that I'd seen a while ago, and I think there are actually two ideas that I've seen for alternate text input into a device. And the first one that I liked was on the Android, it's called Swipe. Have you ever seen that?
No.
So they have the picture of the keyboard, and the way you type is, instead of, you know, typing each letter, you just you sort of draw them by drawing a line from whatever letter you're on to the next letter, and then you let go and it's a word. And I think that was an interesting method, because it also does a predictive text thing. So when you're going through, it puts up like the potential word choices, and if any of those look good, you can tap them with your other finger. So really, you're just using one finger or two if you're you know, agreeing with one of the choices.
Yeah, but we know how good predictive texting works. It's a bunch of bullshit.
I think predictive. I'm a fan of predictive texting versus autocorrect, personally. I think the autocorrect.
I think they both have a long way to go.
Yeah, yeah. The other one that I really liked was a similar drawing thing, but instead of doing text with a keyboard, it's just drawing the letters in. This was an old. When I say old, I actually really mean it. This was maybe 96? Maybe not even that. The original Palm Pilot, wow, made by a 3Com, if I'm remembering correctly, was they had a thing called graffiti, and it was spelled with like a PH or something like that. But it had an area at the bottom, and you would draw simplified versions of the letters. So like the letter A would just be like an upside down V. So it'd be just the up and the down stroke. So there's no crossbar. And that was its own alphabet, but it was all based on how you draw the letters. But they were all like one or two strokes at most for all of the letters. And I found that it was a shorthand, really. And I found that I could write really fast with that. I mean, maybe not as fast as typing, but certainly faster than the competing thing at the time, which was full handwriting recognition by the, I think it was the Apple Newton was doing that. And that was kind of hilarious because it was, if you can imagine how, voice recognition is now, imagine handwriting recognition, 20 years ago. It's at least as good as that. So it's funny. But yeah, I think there should be more kind of interest in different ways of input. I just don't know if throwing a different keyboard into the mix is the way to go.
Yeah, I have enough time working with the regular keyboard. Maybe people need to text less or use those touch interfaces less.
Yeah. I like that. I like that. Yeah. Some other kind of method of input. We just need
We need
something.
a hologram keyboard. That can be, yeah, that's the way to do it. Or projects a keyboard up full size. Get to
the
work, scientists.
well, or we could go, I would be okay with a more kind of brainwave analysis thing, but it would have to be absolutely 100% like, my eyes only as I'm, putting it together, and then you hit like commit when you're ready to send it, because I don't know about you, but I get really distracted really quickly, so it would turn out badly.
Squirrel.
But kind of speaking of 3Com, actually, for the Palm Pilot, I think their patents and stuff were at one. They bought patents from a company called US Robotics, which made modems. God, for connecting to the internet, those crazy, crazy old devices. But one of the so US Robotics, and this is a long segue trail, but you're gonna like it. Whatever movie company made the movie iRobot, they bought the naming rights from US Robotics to call it that in the movie. So they like dredged up some thing at 3Com or Palm or whoever owned it at the time. It may have even been HP. And said, "Hey, we want to call the company in this US Robotics. Is that okay?" And they're like, "Yes, sure, why not? We're not using the name, essentially."
All the robots work out great in that movie, right? There's
Yeah,
no problems.
right. We couldn't possibly get any bad press from something like that. But one of the nice things in that movie was the parking. I don't know if you remember that you'd park the car and then this kind of crane would skyhook the car away and drop it into a much more efficient parking structure than anything you could drive into. And of course, it made for a great set piece for, all the robots kind of fighting Will Smith as he's trying to unpark his car. But the it came up because one of the videos I found was of a parking structure in Japan that's underground, and you wheel your bike up to a thing which grabs the wheels in the frame and then pulls the bike into this structure that's underground that's essentially a big circular or a cylindrical set of bike racks, and they all just kind of, all the bikes just kind of hang inside of it. And you pay some monthly fee to be able to park your bike there. But A, it means that your bike is not above ground. B, you don't have to remember your lock. C, it is completely safe from theft until they figure out some way to get inside the little like robot door, I guess. and D, it's just freaking cool.
instead of red box, red bike.
Yeah, I mean it is very similar, I guess, to a red box kind of thing, except instead of DVDs, it's bikes. But and instead of, I guess, renting them, you're putting them in there, renting the space. Anyway, the analogy may break down, but I think it's a neat idea, because it means that you're freeing up all of the space that you could have been parking bikes with like a park or something, you know, nice. I mean, it does depend on electricity and mechanics and stuff, so you know, if you
what happens if when it jams,
when it
you
jams.
Got a big bike,
when some loser beach puts cruiser. Their crazy like you know, yeah, beach cruiser, oh, that'd be pretty awful.
The basket, they got one of those baskets on the front,
and yeah, it gets caught halfway down and then explodes or whatever. Yeah, that'd be bad. Wow. Yeah, I guess that would kind of suck, because then
there's a high potential for failure here.
However many bikes that are in there are suddenly just stuck in there. They would need some kind of like backup robot or something to pull everything out. Maybe it's not the best idea.
Well, it's okay. A cool idea. There's potential.
I think maybe if they were all those you know, the rental bikes that you would just get for going from, you know, point A to point B, and then you drop them off. Because I have seen bike racks of those, not in any cities in the U.S., unfortunately. I saw them in two cities outside of the U.S. where they just have a rental bike program. So you walk up to the thing, you put some money, it unlocks that bike. You ride it to wherever you need to ride it, and you find another bike rack that is similar, and then you plop it back in. It would work for those, because those are all the same kind of size and type, or at least a known set of sizes and types, so they wouldn't jam. Potential.
People can't be trusted with things. You know when they say, this is why we can't have nice things? It's because we're people.
Oh, probably right. Yeah, speaking of people kind of doing strange and unusual things to the other things, there were two stories that I found this week of kind of... just, I mean, I think it's just straight up animal cruelty.
So, yeah, but not they're not animals.
Insects are animals, sure.
Yeah, but nobody has sympathy for insects.
Well, okay. So there are two stories, and let's lead off with the Kickstarter one, because I'm amazed that this got through on any kind of. This doesn't violate some kind of Kickstarter ethical grounds or anything, but someone has figured out a way to implant a, I guess, essentially a radio-controlled set of circuits that you can stick on a cockroach. And it appears to either... You either have to perform surgery on the cockroach to get the... electrodes to work, but it or they just work through, like, you know, pushing so many volts of electricity through a cockroach's head or whatever. So it causes them to move in, and there it appears that they've figured out some impulses to do specific patterns or movement or have some amount of control, so you can essentially have a You know, they call them the robo roaches, which I'm, as much as I don't like cockroaches, I still think this is an awful thing.
Who's going to be the one who surgically implants these devices onto the cockroach? It says on the Kickstarter, the cockroach undergoes a short surgery under anesthesia. Who's anesthesia on a cockroach?
Oh, so, okay. I was worried that it was like a kit that you buy and then you have to provide the cockroach.
No. No, I think they have people who do the roach specialists.
Oh my gosh. That's what the Kickstarter's paying for, is these roach specialists. I can't see, other than, you know, look what I can do to insects, I don't really see the good in this, maybe, but I guess that's why I'm not supporting it. Do you have the page up? Are they are they funded?
I don't think so. They're almost to the goal.
Oh my gosh.
$7,585 with a goal of
$10,000. Wow.
And there's 21 days to go. So I think it's probably going to happen.
Oh, that's probably going to make it.
Wow. The top level is $500 or more. You get a classroom of robo roaches bundled for educators that want to teach neurotechnology in the classroom. A classroom kit contains robo roaches for 6 students and a limited edition coffee mug for those long nights and early mornings.
Oh my gosh. Wow. Okay. Wow. $500 is all it takes to get 6 roaches. Your unholy army of the night. And a coffee mug to keep you awake while you watch them work.
Yeah, they must have been big fans of Joe's Apartment. Quality cinema.
Or just fans of it, because I can't imagine there were that many. But I bet the ones that were pretty passionate fans.
Yes, we were.
Oh, but the other story, which is less, I mean, it's not a crowdsourced thing, as far as I know, is they've put essentially a backpack on a dragonfly with some sensors that can watch the dragonfly's brains, the synapses fire when they're rolling around and flying around and hunting. And what they do is they put this on the dragonfly and kind of release it into a small enclosed area with a bunch of mosquitoes, which dragonflies apparently hunt. And then they use an infrared camera to see the dragonflies, and then they track them in real time and look for the brain impulses that during the hunt and kill process for dragonflies. So they're specifically looking at how dragonflies hunt, which I think is also interesting. Mainly because the slow motion video of the dragonfly grabbing that mosquito is really cool, but I also am kind of concerned that it's okay to just put essentially, a backpack on a dragonfly, which I mean kudos to them for making it so light. And then it's also I read a thing that it's also unpowered, like it doesn't have a power source on its own. It uses 2 antenna, and they just induce essentially a magnetic field into the whole space. And then as the dragonflies are flying around, that causes a Faraday loop, and you get electric current in the,
like a bumper car.
Yeah. What a great idea. But at the same time, it's like, really? Are we doing this?
I don't understand what we gain from knowing, even if it is successful in the experiment, what do we gain from that? Not to crap on somebody's life's work, but what I don't get it.
It's an interesting kind of bit of stuff. Although I think just the observation part is fine. I think the actual, I guess, more direct observation is a little invasive for dragonflies. I mean, I don't know. I do feel odd about it. I mean, if it just as invasive as it is, right? If you're just monitoring kind of animals, I feel a little better about it. But
yeah, go out to a lake, bring a camera, look at some dragonflies.
Yeah, it's worked for, you know, Discovery Channel and Planet Earth for years, right?
That
kind of thing. The Richard Attenborough or the Sigourney Weaver narration?
David Attenborough.
David Attenborough, okay.
Richard Attenborough is Mr. Hammond. Different Attenborough.
Good call.
Although I would have preferred Richard Attenborough's narration to Sigourney Weaver anyways. I'll take either of the Attenboroughs over her.
Oh.
No offense to her.
Yeah.
But I have an expectation of an old British dude. It's what I've grown up on. All the way back to the Trials of Life.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Wow. Oh, too much. So speaking of kind of those formative TV science programs, Bill Nye is still in the news. It's amazing. There's an article or a profile in the New York Times this week about how he's still kind of on the speaker circuit, or now he's on the speaker circuit, speaking at colleges and things like that, and really just being a very heavy advocate for science and the role of science and how to change the world by making sure young people get an education in science. I think it's great. I mean, I was a huge fan of Bill Nye the Science Guy. And I think using that, I think it's a really interesting turn for him to use that kind of persona and platform. Because his background is really just, there was nothing in his background that said to me like, oh yeah, science advocate. I actually knew him from, there was a show that was on at, what was it? It was a sketch comedy show. It wasn't Kids in the Hall. Oh, I'm not going to get it. There was someone has to remind me. It was great. There was a sequence that they did called High Five and White Guys.
What?
And it was just these guys that were like walking around at a mall, and one of them would pick up a jacket and go, "Hey, look at this. Yeah." And then they'd be high-fiving each other, and that was the whole sketch. And he was one of the people that was doing that. And this was pre Bill Nye the Science Guy, I think. But it was, he was kind of a comedian, and he did some sketch comedy. And then apparently he worked in, aerospace a little bit. So, I mean, he does have kind of a genuine science background and an engineering background, but, I thought it was interesting for him to blend kind of the performance ship and then the engineering stuff really well.
That sketch show you were thinking of was Almost Live.
Aha!
Out of Seattle, Washington.
Ah, thank you.
I just knew that. I didn't look it up at all.
Well, you typed very silently on your holographic keyboard there, I guess.
Yes.
But, yeah, Bill Nye, still a thing, good stuff.
Defending science and science literacy, definitely a thing, because there's so many voices out there that are in the opposite direction, and that opposite direction is into the past.
Yes.
Nice to have someone speaking for the future.
Yeah, we're big fans of the future here on the Not a Thing podcast.
Yeah, we're going to have to live in it. It's not entirely selfless.
Yeah, but I think, is that it? Do we have anything else to hit on this week? This week was kind of, I wouldn't say light. There were definitely things that happened this week, but things worth talking about. That's mostly it. I think we're subconsciously saving our energy for our guest for next week. So when you listen to these in sequence, the next one was going to be excellent.
I'm calling it. Time of death of this podcast is 9:50 p.m. June 18th. Of this episode, not of the whole podcast.
Oh, good.
You know, we're going to keep doing them.
Yeah, we have to make it to a year, whatever that numerically ends up being podcast wise. I'm not sure what it's going to be, but
for a year, we should get all our previous guests on at the same time, and then just everybody talks over each other. Just free for all cage match podcast. It's never been done. Whoever shouts the loudest gets to keep talking.
We
eight guests enter, one guest leaves.
Right. Oh yeah, how many guests do we have? I guess that could work. I think our chat software can handle that many people. We'll see.
I think we're at like 7 or 8.
Yeah. Well, by then, right?
By then we'll have had hundreds in the next month.
Cool. Well, thank you everyone for listening, and thanks, Brendan, for putting up with me for another week.
It's my pleasure, Alan. Excelsior!
Good stuff, Brendan. We'll talk to you next week, and maybe we'll have a guest.